1585. In The Morning of the Magicians, it's conjectured that if superhumans, mutants, etc., live among us undetected, they would use such things, carriers, as popular novels, and I suppose music and films, to communicate, keep in touch with one another. Whether such superhuman mutants exist is not the issue. The issue is that the authors of that book saw the utility of pop or trash novels as vehicles of cooked, freighted messages. Why would they make good vehicles? 1. They are unlike TV and newspapers, international. What else is? 2. Exact wording could be employed. 3. Detection of the cryptomorphosis material would be difficult because there are so many pop novels, films, and songs. 4. Here's a good reason. The receivers, proper ones, of the info could not be discerned, even if the code was detected and decoded, because anyone can and does hear, read pop culture stuff. Heavy shit might fall on the author by the intelligence people, an effort to find out all about him and who he's mixed up with. In fact, that'd be the only recourse, investigating the author. The trail would lead back to him, not to the receivers. Maybe he would know whom it was for. So let's see what groups he belongs to. In interception of direct messages, they'd be able to pinpoint the receivers, which is what it's all about, especially if the author consciously knew nothing but merely dutifully wrote down his dreams. In the Bowie flick, he puts coded material to his ETI wife on an LP which radio stations play. Note: Nicholas Regg's 1976 The Man Who Fell to Earth, an inspiration for the film Valis in Valis, stars David Bowie as the extraterrestrial Thomas Jerome Newton. End note. So it would be ideal then if the author knew nothing, was subliminally cued. Of course, if when the heavy shit came down on him, if the mutants were ethical and not exploitive, they'd rescue him. And they'd know when he was in trouble by means of the same paranormal powers by which they got their material into his books in the first place. They would have to be more or less continuously linked to him telepathically. The only way he might ever come to know about this tutelary telepathic link would be if when he heard a voice inside his head thinking thoughts he couldn't or wouldn't think himself, including foreign words, and have strange quasi-dream experiences. A particularly telling clue would be if he dreamed about evolved mutant-like people talking to him, especially from far away. Note: here again, we meet Dick's mystical mutants. More importantly, we see the multiple influences that helped shape his zapped imagination of these figures. First, we see a book, Lewis Powell's and Jacques Berger's The Morning of the Magicians. Originally, Les Matins des Magiciens, 1960, which employed the tropes of mutants, superhumans, even Superman, to advance a countercultural occultism inspired largely by the books of the American Charles Fort. Second, we see the importance of Dick's auditions, psychical experiences, the tutelary telepathic link, and dreams, and their profound influence on his writing life. Also significant here is the fact that the first American edition of The Morning of the Magicians was published by Avon, the same publisher that would later publish an edition of Dick's Radio Free Albemuth. In short, we see here within Dick's paperback world a mind-bending feedback mechanism, or loop of pop culture and altered states of consciousness, arcing back on itself through countless acts of reading, dreaming, and writing. A morphing superconsciousness published or made public in the only form of our culture that will have it: fantastic literature. JJK. End note. 1587. eye, joint, three stigmata, ubic, and maze, are all the same novel written over and over again. The characters are all out cold and lying around together on the floor, mass hallucinating a world. Why have I written this up at least 5 times? Because, as I discovered in 374 when I experienced anamnesis, remembered I'm really an apostolic Christian, and saw ancient Rome. This is our condition. We're mass hallucinating this 1970s world. What's got to be gotten over is the false idea that an hallucination is a private matter. 15.100. What if the protostory in Tears is a sort of living DNA? That guides an entelechy through its growth steps. Are we the intended entelechy? Bateson's immanent mind that narrates information to each living entity, Tears, the latent story therein, shows benchmarks of the mind that fashioned me and all other life. Note: Gregory Bateson, 1904 to 1980, was a social scientist and cyberneticist who wrote the popular 1972 book Steps to an Ecology of Mind. He spoke of immanent mind in a naturalistic, non-theistic manner. End note. It is mind, perhaps, exerted directly on the novel, incised form. As if not through me, it is direct arrangement, like tea leaves or animal entrails. Burroughs cut up message pieces, latent meaning extraction method. This being replicates itself through, as, information. I think it acted as a booster, i.e., first received, then transmitted. It acted like the divine wafer, the species of the Eucharist. A living word entity is here with us, taking us over via messages we receive. We act as hosts to it, perhaps temporarily. We become it. 15.113. We are going to have to deal with propositions which are simultaneously both true and false. My corollary is that mutually contrary propositions may be equally true. 15.114. The voice. Words control reality, i.e., the secret narrative will cause itself to be true by affecting the plastic universe. Words equals thoughts. The narrative comes first. Note. Here Dick nails two crucial features of the paranormal. 1. The fantastic, or both and, paradoxical structure of its appearances, which leave the reader and even the experiencer in a state of profound hesitation or confusion over the event's reality. And, 2. The manner in which these paradoxical events organize themselves around narrative, story, or, to be more traditional about it, myth. Hence, Dick's secret narrative comes first to shape reality, even the physical universe, around its patterns and meanings. Seen in this light, it is a serious mistake to approach a paranormal experience with an up-down vote, as if it were a simple object out there that could be measured and controlled. This is to miss its wildly living function and fierce message, which are all about pulling us into its own drama and shattering our either-or thinking through story and symbol. In short, the paranormal is about paradox, not proof, about meaning, not mechanism, about myth, not math. Most of all, however, the paranormal is about the coincidence or fundamental unity of mind and matter. Two of Dick's favorite scholars captured this truth in two Latin soundbites: the Mysterium Conjunctionis, or Mystery of Conjunction, of C.G. Jung, and the Coincidentia Oppositorum, or Coincidence of Opposites, of Mercier Eliade. J.J.K. End note. 15.116. Voice. God is looking for balking as a criterion. Some kind of nonlinear onion time is represented, as hinted at in Ubik, in which entropy allowed former layers to be exposed. Much to everyone's surprise, Ubik presented the paste-up model of reality, very much a laminated time continuum model. The accretions are laid down in circular passes, circumference, and then read orthogonally, radii. There is much in common between the cosmology of Ubik and my lamination explanation of 374. Question is, how does one get above the circumference tracking so as to experience several layers as a simultaneous entity, as I did in 374? Evidently, by mentally being bonded to a supratemporal life form, i.e., zebra. Is zebra Ubik, the anti-entropic energy mind word? Which narrates? And whose story is the growth of the organism? It tells it what to do next. Bateson. Then each laminated layer is the laying down of a new growth stage, as in the spiral of the conch shell. For example, the 1974 layer superimposes over ancient Rome in such a way as to convert the illegal power into voluntarily resigning. Then no single layer can be read, lacking the one below and above it. In our lives, we track the circumference, which means we experience only one layer. We can't read it orthogonally. We're part of the mechanism and not above it. But a written statement of the narrative could fall into our hands, or we could hear it, etc. This would be the DNA, metaphorically, of the developing organism, and could tell us what we can't see. 15.133. My writing is salvific in terms of this one road. One dharma of several. The dharma of knowledge. An epistemological path, not a moral path, is put forth. Not the world is evil, but the world is irreal. This is Gnostic, not pious. But the act, the crucial act, of balking was, for me, moral. It develops out of an awareness of the counterfeit, viz., it is wrong ethically to collude with the deceitful and fake. No assertion is made, though, that the world, irreal as it is, cannot inflict punishment for balking. These are the demons of the bardo todal existence, journey which I experienced. At the end, I was reborn. 15.141. I rather suspect that my transfer of ascent in 274 was itself programmed and not truly an unanticipated malfunction. I was programmed to discover I was programmed, and in a very dramatic way, specifically one which brought me to a confirmation of the epistemological doubts I'd expressed in 27 years of writing. I certainly hesitate to claim I did it. My will? No. Accident? Possibly. Yahweh's will? Very likely. Best to assume a spark of Brahman in each of us view, so that my quest was God's quest, really. To know himself, etc. Jakob Burma. June or July, 1978. Folder 16. 16.6. Voice. You, i.e., the surface PKD personality, and the alibi are both equally expendable. Does alibi equal world? Yes, the false simulated USA 1974 world. I deduce from this, then, that the Rome circa AD 45 world is real, which is why it appears in tears, and USA 1974 is an alibi to conceal it. The alibi KW and I are looking for is the very world we seem to be in, and the true story is acts. Voice. I go to AD 45 Rome when I die, meaning me. Then Rome AD 45 acts, is not a past life, but a future life. And why am I going there? Because it is real. These worlds have to be regarded as stories, narratives. USA 1974 is a spurious one to cover up the real one. 1610. K.W. spoke of sabotage versus malfunction, an issue which I dismissed. But then the voice called the USA 1974 world an alibi world, which is expendable. Sabotage, not by an evil party, but by a friend, since this is the thrall situation. I misunderstood K.W. Sabotage of the prison machinery, an induced malfunction, which, by the way, answers the epistemological questions I've chewed over in 27 years of writing having to do with simulated worlds, hence Lem's question. E.g., Delmac O equals USA 1974. Persis 9 equals Rome, circa AD 45. The tattoo equals the golden fish. God, all my This Is Illusion writings, I, joint, stigmata, ubic, maze, are analogs of the USA 1974 versus the glimpse of Rome circa AD 45 via the golden fish sign. Here we are. But where are we really? And then someone gets a glimpse, as in, the earth is hollow and I have touched the sky. Usually, once the simulation is detected, there are assorted guesses. But sometimes, the first clue, vis-a-vis simulating of world, is the glimpse. My God, my life, which is to say my 274-374 experience, is exactly like the plot of any one of 10 of my novels or stories, even down to fake memories and identity. I'm a protagonist from one of PKD's books. Note: Dick's fiction establishes an unusually strong connection between the author and his characters, and specifically his protagonists, men who are down on their luck and forced to encounter, once again, the inscrutable apathy of the universe. These characters give voice to Dick's own existential concerns. His third wife, Anne, called his writing surrealist autobiography. In a 1970 letter to SF Commentary, Dick wrote, "I know only one thing about my novels. In them, again and again, this minor man asserts himself in all his hasty, sweaty strength against the universal rubble." Part of Dick's charm as a writer is precisely his similarity to his characters, barely eking out a living, languishing as an underappreciated artist. Dick is nonetheless determined to move forward against overwhelming odds. As Dick's public persona has grown following his death, a persona based in part on his life and in part on the plight of his characters, he has become increasingly mythological. Later reprint editions of his novels often picture Dick on their covers, staring out at potential readers, part author, part fiction, trapped in the half-life of his own stories. D.G. Endnote. USA 1974 fades out. Ancient Rome fades in. And with it, the Thomas personality and true memories. Geez. Mixture of imposter, joint, and maze, if not ubic as well. What the malfunction or induced malfunction proves is the existence of at least one world-generating mind, and, as I failed to see in those earlier notes, possibly two world-generating, even competing minds. Competing worlds, competing world-generating minds, plus the passive programmed observing little non-world-generating mind. Is this a battle for his allegiance? World against world, mind against mind? The voice last night scathingly referred to USA 1974 as the corresponding PKD personality as both being expendable. Diabolic interpolation? Simulation? 1613. I guessed a long time ago that the world we perceive is a simulation. But this diagnosis only makes sense when you can point to a real world to contrast it to and this prior to 274 I could not do. Note: Dick is often read by literary scholars as a postmodern writer. Postmodernism is a complex of concepts that assert that all our constructs are just that, constructs, that there are no grand narratives or abiding truths, that all such grand narratives are illegitimate power moves, and that every perspective is necessarily a limited and local one. Here Dick realizes that such a way of thinking, which he himself has championed in dozens of novels, is a half-truth, in the sense that its claims rely on a non-duped subjectivity and a privileged claim, which, ironically, is itself a grand narrative or abiding truth. Dick, then, was finally no postmodern thinker, not at least in the sense in which that label is commonly understood. In his own mind, at least, his body of work constituted both a demonstration that the sensory and social world is an illusory simulation and a revelation of another order of mind and being from outside this maze of cognitive and cultural tricks. As Dick puts it later on in the exegesis, Vallis proves there is an outside. JJK. End note. I now understand the crucial role of assent, programmed assent, and what happens if assent is suddenly broken and then transferred, and also why we give unconditional assent to this simulated world. Why, for instance, the search expressed in my novels makes no sense to many people.